What people do you know?
Remember that St. Croix drink we had at the...
Oh, that was horrible.
This is just like it, only tangerine flavor.
Okay. What did we just... We just got done epistemology. What was epistemology?
No idea.
By the way, this is philosophy lecture number 9, I believe. Yeah, epistemology is the branch of philosophy that deals with knowledge, how man knows, what man knows. That was philosophy lecture number 9. It's part 3 in Geisler and Feinberg's introduction to philosophy. Part 3, what is reality, which deals with metaphysics. So it answers the question, what is reality, deals with reality. Okay? The question you want to look at first, the whole section deals with what is reality. Is reality one or many? Is reality one or many? This was one of the ancient problems of Greek philosophy. If reality is one, how do we explain the apparent multiplicity? If reality is all one being, why does it look like there's different beings? Why does it seem like there's different beings? However, if reality is many, how do we explain the apparent unity? Okay? Now, there's... Let's see, about 2, 3, 4 different main views. There's monism, which says that all reality is one. Then we have pluralism, reality is many. Plotinus comes on the scene. Greek philosopher, Plotinus. Okay, Plotinus comes on the scene and says that the one is beyond the many. Okay, one goes beyond, or one, actually, one goes beyond being, is what he's saying. Beyond being, which we're going to see there's some problems with that. And then there's the Christian Trinity view. Now, this is, most Christians who hold to the doctrine of Trinity don't hold to this view. So just because you believe in the Trinity doesn't mean that you're going to hold to this metaphysical view. But they see the Trinity as itself, God being one being but three persons, as a model of the one and the many. These guys really do believe in the Trinity. They see the Trinity as a model, or like a model of King Kong. Isn't really King Kong, it's a model of him. And God isn't the universe, but he's a model, pattern that the universe follows. Since God is one in many, the universe is one in many.
So not only did God create man, and limits he created, everything he created is his pattern.
Well, that's what they would argue. Now, we'll see. Geisler points out some problems with it, and I agree with him. Francis Schaeffer does hold to that view, and Cornelius Van Til held to it as well. So let's take a look at monism first. With monism, there was a guy, an ancient Greek philosopher named Parmenides. And he says that things cannot differ by non-being, because non-being equals nothing. Non-being equals nothing. So these things cannot differ by non-being. But he also said things cannot differ by being, because all things exist. All things have being. Okay, so he said non-being equals nothing. So if things differ by non-being, they're the same, because not they differ by nothing. But then they can't differ by being, because just the fact that all things that exist do exist means they all have being. And so what he argued there is that everything must be the same being. Okay, you see where he argues along those lines?
I'm sure.
And, Pat, let me see if
I'm not grasping that it can't differ by non-being.
Well, non-being, being means something which is. Non-being means nothing. It means nothing, you know, non-existing, so it means nothing. Okay? That podium has being, so it exists. If that podium had non-being, it would not exist. So if things differ by non-being, they would differ by nothing. So that if they differ by being,
like that's being according to yeah, being here.
Yeah, like in other words, if I differed from that podium, if the only difference between me and that podium was non-being, since non-being is nothing, I would be identical with that podium. But there's no, I cannot differ from that podium by being, because that podium has being just like I have being. I exist and the podium exists. Everything that exists has being.
Okay.
Something, you could say something, you know, like the verb be, to be,
right,
or not to be. If you are something that has being, you know, you're something that exists. So, both I and the pulpit have being, so we don't differ by that, but...
Neither one of you is not being.
And neither one of us, if we differed by non-being, non-being is nothing anyway, so it wouldn't be different. Yeah.
Could you substitute that for like being material?
No, because there would still be the possible, like a spirit being still exists, like an angel. So it doesn't necessarily mean being material, unless you were material. If you were a materialist, then the only thing that has being is the material universe, so then you could say it. But if you believe in the spiritual realm, then there can be spirit entities that exist that have being. So you could, you know, being means existence, something that has existence. We don't differ by existence, we both share existence, we both have existence, and we don't differ by non-existence, because non-existence is nothing. And so he said everything is one being. In fact, his whole argument is spelled out on page 168 in the philosophy textbook. The Parmenidean argument for monism. And you could look at that. Look over that when you get a chance. It's actually a more powerful argument than it really sounds at first. But we'll see how to get around it a little later. Zeno was a famous disciple of Parmenides. And Zeno said, if reality is many, then many absurdities follow. So Zeno came up with his famous paradox, Zeno's paradox. He said that movement is impossible. See, now, movement can only take place if reality is many. Because for me to move, I've got to move from some place to some other place. And so to move from this chair to that podium, from point A to point B, they have to exist, and then I have to exist to make the movement, so reality has to be many. So for me to move from point A to point B, from this chair to that podium, Zeno said, first I have to go halfway. Then to get from that point to the podium, I have to go halfway. Then to get from that point to the podium, I have to go halfway. Then to get from that point to the podium, I have to go halfway, and I never do reach there. And it goes on and on infinitely. So Zeno said, though movement seems to be real, if it was real, it would generate absurdities. He used the, remember, Zeno used the reductio ad absurdum, reducing your opponent's arguments to their absurdities. So he said movement is really impossible, and therefore, since movement is impossible, it's just an illusion, and everything is one being. Okay? So he argued the same as his teacher. He was a monist just like Parmenides. Now, he was arguing basically that space is both finite and infinite. And so to go from point A to point B, it's just a contradiction. Movement is impossible. A reply to monism is this, to Zeno, there may be a point at which space can no longer be split.
You are required to cover the whole distance.
Yeah.
You can't do half of it.
Yeah, and then not only that, the fact is that he was talking about with all these splitting things in half, you know, you're talking about, well, this can potentially be split in half. This can potentially be split in half. You're dealing with potentialities or possibilities. And Aquinas drew the distinction between the actual and the potential. Okay? For instance, if you take an actual thing like a marker, between point A and point B, between this chair and that podium, you could only have a finite number of actual markers laid down side by side. Okay? Even if you use something small like straight pins, you can only have a finite number of them. But if you deal with potentialities, the potential realm, yeah, you can have actual infinites in the potential realm, but you can't have actual infinites in the actual realm. But the arbiter's reply to Parmenides would be that things can differ in being and still be genuinely different. In other words, there can be different types of being. Christian would argue that God is infinite being, and all other being is finite being. See now Aquinas, you know how Aquinas would deal with this? We'll get to him a little while, but Aquinas would say everything that has being is actual. And in that, Parmenides is right. We don't differ in existence because we all have existence. Yeah, it's just a type of existence. With different existences, you have different potentialities. Okay? Even with humans, we all have the same potentialities to a certain degree that would differ from animals, but even there, some humans have more potential in some areas and others less in other areas. And so there's ways to differentiate between different actual beings. Okay? God, though, would exist purely actual. He never, his existence was never potential and then had to be actualized by something else. His existence was always actual. Another area is, though, I think a lot of philosophers recognize, though, God has to have more potential than any other being. Aquinas downplayed that a little, but Terry L. Meade and some of my other professors, infinite potential means infinite power, infinite ability to do that which you set out to do. But as far as God's existence, that's potential and power. But as far as when we're talking about existence, God's existence is purely actual. He is that one purely actual being, and all other being is derived being, is finite being. Pluralism.
Go ahead. Are we allowed to bring this out into the real world, Zeno paradox, and say that, well, since motion is patently possible, that there must be a flaw in the argument?
But Aquinas didn't argue that. Aquinas took it further than that and said, since movement is obviously real, only a jackass would reject it. there's something wrong with Zeno's argument.
Okay, that's
so, yeah. Aquinas argued we got to accept some first principles, and your first principles can't be proven by other premises, because if they were, then they wouldn't be first principles. Reasoning's got to stop somewhere. And one of his first principles is always implied, is the basic reliability of sense experience. And in fact, you can't even do any kind of science. That's where Gordon Clark slams modern science. They think they've proven everything. But if there is no such thing as movement, then modern science just caves in. Yet, they assume movement is real, and they just go on from that point. But modern science went through Aristotle. You know, they weren't the founders of it. They were kind of the pre... The guys that poured the foundation were Aristotle and then Aquinas, whose philosophy was based on Aristotle. And then modern scientists used a lot of their, and one of the main premises was the basic reliability of sense experience. Pluralism says that reality is many. Reality is many. Atomism, A-T-O-M-I-S-M, that teaching teaches that things differ by absolute non-being. Democritus and Leucippus held to this, two Greek philosophers. Things differ by absolute non-being. They're trying to say how things that exist differ, and they say they differ by absolute non-being. They said that reality is constituted by an innumerable amount of atoms that are indivisible, you can't split them, which fill the void of space. And the void of space is pure emptiness. It's absolutely nothing. And so each atom differs from another atom by occupying different places in this empty space. So atomism is saying that things differ by absolute non-being. The criticism of this view is that it falls to Parmenides' criticism. To differ by absolute non-being is to differ by absolutely nothing. And he's the same thing. When you say that something takes up a different space than something else, if that space is nothing, then it doesn't really take up a different space than something else. So, this idea that things can differ by absolute non-being is fallacious. Another criticism, not only to differ by absolute non-being is to differ by absolutely nothing, another criticism is that space is not an empty container. Space is not an empty container. You don't have one part of space where there's, you know, going to outer space and you found absolutely nothing there. You know, there's always something. What we view as empty space between me and where the first pupil is sitting, there is something in that empty space. It's not empty. It's not absolutely nothing. And so unless there is a real difference in being, Parmenides wins. And so atomism fails. Another pluralistic view, saying reality is many, is Platonism. Platonism, the teachings of Plato. Plato taught that the things differ by relative non-being. Not by absolute non-being, but by relative non-being. Remember, too, Plato's view is the ultimate items in the universe are the ideal forms. The ideals are the forms, the invisible, unchanging universals. But anyway, he said that things differ by relative non-being. In other words, all differentiation is by negation, the otherness of something. That cup, we know that cup is that cup because it is not the Bible, it is not the box of cookies, it is not the little file cabinet for the index cards. That cup is not John Gardner, it is not the marker on his head, it is not that book, it's not that table. So we know that that cup, what it is, by what it is not. And so being, things differ by relative non-being.
So the infinite process of elimination?
That's the problem with it, yeah. It's like this pencil is not everything else. It's not everything else in the world, so it must be this pencil. Criticism, again, differing by non-being, whether you call it relative non-being or absolute non-being, is still differing by nothing. And if all differentiation is to be by negation, then everything else in the universe must be negated just to identify something. So just to identify that this is the finger on my hand, I would have to identify everything else in the entire universe and eliminate them from being my finger before I can say, okay, this is my finger. So it's a pretty ludicrous view. And so the views that try to hold that some way things differ by non-being, they fail. So Aristotle comes on the scene, the student of Plato. And Aristotle says, things differ in their being, which is simple. Now, here's what he meant by that. The ultimate items of reality in the universe are not atoms. The ultimate items are unmoved movers, the gods. Aquinas also held to one unmoved mover above all the other unmoved movers. Unmoved movers are simple beings, pure forms of being. Simple means to be uncomposed of form and matter. To a certain degree, to a certain degree, it would be kind of like just having the soul without the body type of thing. Anyway, unmoved movers literally differ in being. In other words, you have different types of beings that are the gods. They're simple beings, but they differ in their type of beings. So when the gods create the universe, or at least design the universe, the things that they would design would also differ in being. But there was a criticism, the unmoved movers literally differed in being. The criticism recognized by Aristotle himself, in a universe with multiple gods, there would be no unity. In a universe with multiple gods, there would be no real unity. And so he ended up positing another unmoved mover, a single god above them, but then you end up right back in the ballpark of one being. And now you're back to unity. Another criticism of Aristotle's view is that simple beings are pure beings and they don't really differ as such. A simple being would be pure existence, and pure existence would equal pure existence, so they wouldn't differ from each other whatsoever. Now Aquinas, who was Aristotelian in thought, followed Aristotle, at times he would come into an area where he thought that Aristotle needed some correcting. And this was one of the areas. Aristotle said things differ in their being, which is simple, but Aquinas said things differ in their being, which is composed. Let me see if I could... if I have to, I'll just write down here in the bottom. So Aquinas argued that things differ in their being, and being is composed. He argued for both unity and diversity within being itself. He argued that finite being, or limited being, is complex and compound. Finite being is composed of both actuality, the fact that we actually exist, and potentiality. It was possible that we don't exist, so our possibility to exist had to be actualized by something else, i.e. God. But we have different potentialities as well. Different potentialities are real. They make a real difference in the kind of being that a thing is. For instance, humans have the potentials or the possibility to verbally communicate. Slugs do not. It makes a real difference. Human beings have the potentiality to be religious. We have the potentiality to know right from wrong, whereas a slug does not. So potentiality, different potentials are real. They make a real difference in the kind of being that a thing is. Man has a potential for being rational. Tomatoes do not. Now, Parmenides begs the question. Remember, he assumed that being always means the entirely same thing, the exact same thing, in an attempt to prove monism. So he begs begging the question means that your conclusion is snuck into your premises so that the conclusion has to follow because it's part of the premises. And so in other words, first he defines being. Anything that has being must be the same thing. Therefore, all being is one. Okay, he sneaks in. His definition of being is anything that has existence is being, period. End of game. So all that exists must be one being. But Aquinas understands being as analogous. In other words, being is similar. You can have one being that is not the same being as another being, but it's similar. We all have the same actual fault that we all exist, but we exist with different potentialities. Therefore, there are many different beings that share in being. They have existence. And there can be many different beings since they have different potentialities. The unity found in being is that there is only one thing is being, God. This is where Plotinus was, Parmenides was right. Only God is being.
Ooh, God.
Oh my God. Woohoo! We got an end time eschatological heresy there.
You better clear that in
for God, not God. God is being. Okay? That's where we look at Furman before creation took place. Look at Parmenides' argument. Before anything was created, that would hold. God is being. God alone is pure being. That's the unity in being. But everything else has different potentials. God is pure actuality. Everything else has act and potency. Okay? Now again, I'm not talking about potency and what you can do and this and that. It's just the fact that God, as far as his existence is concerned, had no potential to exist. He just had pure actual existence. There was a time when it was possible for us to exist, but we didn't actually exist. And God actualized our potential to exist. Okay? A square circle has no potential to exist. It's an impossible being. But a human being like you and I, we had the potential to exist before we even existed. It was possible for us to exist. But potentialities cannot actualize their own potentials. If something actual has to actualize then. For instance, this cup could be as empty right now. This cup is empty, but it has the potential of being filled with this sparkling water. But this cup cannot actualize its own potential to be filled. This sparkling water, the bottle of sparkling water, has the potential of being poured into that cup, but it cannot actualize it. Now I can come into the picture and actualize that potential. We had the potential to exist. It was possible that we existed, that we could exist, but we could not actualize it. God, an actual being, had to actualize our potential to exist. But God is being. Man, or let's say we have being. See, God gives us. God is, just like God is love, we have love. God is the source of all love. He shares with us his being, shares with us his love. Now, we're not talking pantheism. We're just saying God is actual, and he allows us to become actual by actualizing the possibility of our existing. Okay? So unity in being, only one thing is being, that's God. Everything else has differing potentials. God is pure actuality. Everything else has act potency. Okay? God is not a possible being. He is a pure actual being. Nobody had to actualize his potential to exist. He just always actually existed. In fact, Aquinas would say God's essence, what God is, equals his existence, that he is. Everything else, our essence and our existence are two different things. Who we are is different from the fact that we are. With God is one and the same thing. Now this is also, even though Aquinas rejected the ontological argument for God's existence, when you look at that definition, if God's essence is his existence, and the definition of God is that he is pure existence, then it would seem like he must exist. You could see a little justification for moving in that direction, that God, by definition, must exist. So that's Aquinas. That, by the way, is the view that I hold to. Aquinas' view of pluralism, that things differ in their being, which is composed. In other words, if it was pure, simple being, there's only one pure, simple being, one being who is being by definition, then Parmenides would be right. But that one being, that one simple being is God. Everything else has being, has their finite being given to them by the infinite being, and they're given different potentials. They're potential beings. Okay? So, but now Plotinus, he argues that unity goes beyond being. Now Plotinus was a pantheist. He believed that God is the universe, and he believed that God is the one who goes beyond all being, knowledge, and consciousness. The Christian would say God is being. Plotinus would say, no, God is beyond being. Christian would say God is knowledge, or God has infinite knowledge. Plotinus would say, no, God is beyond knowledge. God is beyond consciousness. So Aquinas argued that all multiplicity and all being flows from the one, but the one himself is beyond being. So then Plotinus saw different degrees of being depending on the degree of unity. The more unified it was, the more real it was, the less separate it becomes, so that the material runs. So he had, Plotinus saw the mind, which he called nous, N-O-U-S, was the most unified of all beings. So the mind, the nous, is God that goes beyond being. Next comes the world soul. The world soul, what the Hindus talk about it all, and then matter is last in the change of being, because that's the most that contains the most multiplicity. Criticism of Plotinus' view is being is that which is real, which is what being is by definition, and if the one is real, then it is not really beyond being. Let me repeat that. If being is that which is real, and it is, because that's all that being means, and if the one is real, if God is real or the one is real, then it is not really beyond being. And you could also reverse that criticism and say, if the one is beyond being, then the one is non-being. Okay? I mean, God either is or God is not. You can't have it both ways. And if God doesn't fall in the category of is, which is the category of being, if he's beyond that, then he's non-existent. Now, the Christian Trinity, a model for the one and the many, I do not hold to this. I think Geisler refutes it here pretty well. Francis Schaeffer held to it, and one of his professors, Cornelius Van Til, held to it. There is only one God, that's the unity, but this one God is three persons, that's the plurality. Now, I believe that there is only one God who is three persons. I agree with the doctrine of the Trinity, no problem with that. But viewing God as the explanation for different beings, we need to recognize God is still what? One in being. God is one being but three persons. That is still not an explanation for different beings. See what I'm getting at? God is three persons, but he's only one being. God is not one being and three beings. Now, by the way, Cornelius Van Til, who came up with this view, I believe, he did dabble in contradictions. He did say God is one person and God is three persons, and he implied God is one being and he is three beings. That's ludicrous. The true doctrine of Trinity, God is only one being but three persons. So God is one being but three persons. Still, that's no explanation for different beings. The fact that there are three persons in God doesn't explain how there can be many beings in the universe. Okay? I think we need that Thomistic, more complex argument to prove that there's many beings in the universe. They differ in their potentialities, in real potentials. They don't differ in non-being, and they don't differ in being, in pure being. They differ in that they have act and potency, and some have different potential. Some beings have different potentials than others. Now, the model for the Trinity, the Trinity does explain an objection to Christianity, and that is that some would argue that if God is all-sufficient, he would not need anything, and that's true, that's what Christians hold to. Therefore, but if God was a God of love, he would need to create other beings capable of loving, accepting his love in order for him to have a love relationship. Well, the Christian Trinity says that God did not need to create in order to fellowship, because the three persons of the Trinity had eternal fellowship. Therefore, God created because he wanted to. And so if God was a one-person God, but was a loving God, he would have needed to create us to have a love relationship. But because God is a three-person God, the three members of the Trinity have a loving relationship throughout all eternity, God did not need to create man. He created man because he wanted to. So that does explain some things, but at the same time, it doesn't answer the question that we're trying to deal with. Yeah, God is a unity and diversity, but he's a unity in that he is only one being. He's a diversity in that he is three persons. Still, that is no explanation for different beings. The fact that there are three persons in God doesn't explain how there could be many beings in the universe. So out of all of these, I would say pluralism, reality is many, is the answer. At the same time, it needs to be explained by the Thomistic thought, Aquinas, that God, pure actuality, pure being, is one, and that is God. God is being, and so there you see where Parmenides' argument comes into play. Being is being, period. But God alone is pure being. We have being. God gives us being. And he gives us, we're finite being. He's infinite being. We're finite, limited, dependent being, dependent on him for our existence. He's totally independent. And so we have derived existence, derived being from him. And that being comes with an actual pole, we exist, and a potential pole, we have different potentialities. So conclusion, monism teaches there's only one being in the universe. Pluralism teaches there's many beings in the universe. But Christian deist teaches there's a real unity and a real diversity of being in the universe. The unity of being is God is the one being from whom all other beings exist. The diversity of being is that beings are similar. There's an analogy between beings. They're similar but not identical to one another. And the difference there is in the different potentialities. And so that's chapter 11. Now we're going to move on to chapter 12. Still in metaphysics, we'll be in metaphysics for a few lectures. The relationship between the mind and body. The relationship between the mind and body. relationship between the mind and body, or if you will, the relationship between the soul and the body, the way we look at it. Whereas materialists look at it as the relationship between the brain and the body. The significance of this topic is morality and law are misguided. Morality and law are fallacious if men are robots. If man is only material, then religion is false. So this is very significant for Christians to look into this. Now there are monistic theories of man, and there are dualistic theories of man. We got monistic theories of man, and then we have dualistic theories of man. Okay. Monistic man is one, and then there's the dualistic theories, man is two, mind and body. Under the monistic theories, there's extreme materialism, which basically means we are our bodies. Your body is all that you are. Your brain does the thinking. Number two, there's the identity theory. Another monistic view. Monistic just means the views that man has one component. The dualistic views, man has two components, whether it's soul and body or whatever. Idealism is another, the third monistic view. It's the opposite of extreme materialism. Idealism, the mind is all that exists. Extreme materialism, the body is all that exists. Okay? So extreme materialism is the body that exists, and body alone that exists, and idealism is the mind alone that exists. Then there's the double aspect theory. We'll get into that in the next lecture. Double aspect theory. Then the dualistic theories of man. There's interactionism. There's parallelism. There's pre-established harmony. There's occasionalism. And epiphenomenalism. And so what we're going to be doing, we're going to be looking at those, the monistic views, extreme materialism, the identity theory, idealism, and the double aspect theory. Man is one component, monistic views. Dualistic views, man is two components, body and soul, and how they relate to each other, different views. Interactionism, parallelism, pre-established harmony, occasionalism, and epiphenomenalism. Now let me see. We've got a few minutes left, so we'll get started on this, and then we'll just pick up where we leave off in the next lecture. Monistic theories of man. Extreme materialism teaches that we are our bodies. So it's the body alone. The body alone. We are our bodies. It's extreme materialism. We are identical with our bodies. We are nothing more than our bodies. When we die, we cease to exist. Criticisms of this view is that things like guilt, that is moral, but it is not physical. I mean, when you feel guilt, that is not something that is physical. Moral predicates, which part of our body is guilty? Mental predicates, which part of our body loves or is angry. Okay? When you get angry, where are you angry? Like, when your hand hurts, you can know it. You know, somebody stabs you in your hand. But when you get angry, where do you get angry? What part of your body? You know, if we want people to stop being angry, let's just amputate whatever part of the body causes anger. Just amputate it, and then nobody will be angry anymore. So the whole man appears to be more than the body. The whole man is guilty. Not just your pinky or your nose. The whole man is guilty. The whole man is loving. Or the whole man is angry. Even pain, even if your hand hurts, you are in pain. Not just your hand, you are in pain. You don't say, oh, my hand is killing me, or I got a split and headache, but my feet feel really great. Hey, if your head, if you got a bad headache, you hurt, period. The whole man is guilty, loving, or angry. Even epistemological predicates of knowledge, truth or falsehood or something, truth or falsehood can't be determined solely on a physical basis. You've got to make, draw a rational conclusion that goes beyond the physical realm. What does a thought look like? You know, nobody's... There's been guys say, well, I've never... I've operated... It was like supposedly a heart surgeon and a brain surgeon, and the heart surgeon... The brain surgeon was an atheist, and the heart surgeon was a Christian, and the brain surgeon said to the heart surgeon, when you operated, have you ever found a soul yet? And the heart surgeon smiled and said, well, when you operate on the brain, have you ever found the thought yet? And thoughts are immaterial. And so what does a thought look like? What about love? What does love look like? If it's all materialistic, it doesn't hold water. And that's the view of extreme materialism.